il corner dentro, il colpo di testa, Zapata, Zapata, dovrebbe essere gol, è gol, Zapata, lo dice la Goal Line Technology, al 97esimo, il Milan trova il 2-2, impazzisce la curva sud.
Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host Ollie, joined for the 21st episode by AJ.
What's up, guys? We hit that new benchmark. We're into the 20s now. Glad to be back.
Yeah, absolutely. We're still going strong on the whole weekly thing, which is good. Yeah, how's things, mate? Good day at work?
It was unique. Had some interesting people. I'm not going to get into too many details about it. I told you privately, but had some unique work business today. Without giving too much away, I work for a telecommunication company in our executive offices, and had some important people in the government contact me about a mistake that they made. So definitely interesting day. Like I said, not going to give any details of that mess, but very unique day at work today, that's for sure.
Yeah, I knew you weren't going to give much away, but I just had to drop it in there. I've had a quiet day, to be fair, mate. Just basking in yesterday's victory. It's good when I have a Monday off because I get to obviously like rewatch the game in full, which is very helpful, because when you're reporting on the game, sometimes you don't necessarily see everything because you're like rushing it out. But I've managed to rewatch the game today. I've actually rewatched it twice now. Once was the 1 hour highlight show, and then I watched the game back in full. I'm talking about our win over Kievo on Sunday, obviously. So yeah, that's all I've really been doing today. Just reflecting on another victory. But before we get into that, we've got to talk about Thursday night. A lot of Milanisti will not have had a good night watching the game. I had a pretty good night, I think it's fair to say. We did get knocked out 5-1 on aggregate, which seemed harsh on the balance of play. But we got knocked out 5-1 on aggregate by Arsenal. Bit unfair overall, do you think?
Yeah, honestly, we were the better team, and the better team lost. I think we played poorly in that first leg at San Siro, but I don't think either goal was really anything that we could have prevented. I think the first one was a deflection, so you know that's just, it is what it is there. The second one was a slip. If Donnarumma didn't slip, I'd say there's like an 80% chance he would have saved any shot that Ramsey would have made. Then we potentially could have been in the second leg 0-0. That would have been great. And then there, Hakan had an incredible shot from, 25, maybe 30 yards deep. Beautiful. Really set the pace, or so we thought it would. And then 3 minutes later, as everyone is well aware of, Danny Welbeck flops like a fish out of water, salmon on deck, and referee seems to buy it. Apparently he's a big Arsenal fan, it would seem here, and gave away free penalty. Arsenal's now up 3-1 on aggregate. Opposite end, about a minute later, there's a legitimate foul in the box that would have been a penalty for us, as it should have been, and we actually got a card for simulation, and then we got another card for simulation on another legitimate foul for us. So very unique stuff at that point. The team was still pushing. We were the better team. And they just got disheartened after everything that was going on with the referee and the way everything else played in the first leg. I think they honestly just quit. They didn't have the heart in it. And it's hard not to blame them for it. The fans were awesome. You were one of them. But once the third goal came in, or their second goal, I believe that was also a deflection, was it not? Yeah, Donnarumma saved it, but somehow it bounced off his hands back to the ground in front of him, and then backwards with some backspin on over him into the net. I mean, that was a legitimate goal, still a deflection, kind of BS, but it is what it is. It was a real goal, and I think at that point they just stopped, and the third goal was just whatever. Without the referee giving that penalty, I believe we won that game and potentially the tie, but what were your thoughts on it? You were there.
Yeah, I was. Yeah, it was a really, really amazing experience, which I'll get into after. But my thoughts on the game are that over the two legs, particularly in the second leg at the Emirates, that was a game of incidents, and I feel like all the debatable, all the controversial incidents in that game went against us. And had there been a split, had there been half-half, if Welbeck doesn't get the penalty, if we get one of the penalties that we should have got, there is absolutely no way that we're talking about being knocked out of the competition now. No way, because after... Well, I would say we were a little bit nervous in the opening stages, but once we settled down, we started creating things. You know, Andre Silva had a chance at the near post that he fired into the side netting. And you just got the feeling that Arsenal were a little bit shaking, a little bit nervous at the back. And then we got the goal from Çalhanoğlu, and the people around me in the away end were really starting to believe. You know, it was like a party atmosphere all game, but especially after that goal. And then 3 minutes later, the thing that really killed our momentum was that horrendous penalty decision. I can't think of a worse officiating performance I've seen live. It was just terrible. Absolutely terrible. Like you say, we should have had a penalty, and there was a yellow card for simulation. We should have also had a penalty for blatant handball for me, a cross that deflected onto someone's arm. I don't remember. It was at the other end of the stadium. But I saw it on the big screen, and it was a definite handball for me. Yeah, the ref had so many opportunities to even it up, and he just never did. And in the end, Hakan's strike was for nothing. Like you say, I think when that ball took the spin that it did and rolled in from Xhaka's shot, the players did kind of just give up. I think Gattuso maybe told them just to slow it down a little bit with an eye on Sunday night's game, obviously. But it was never, ever a 5-1 aggregate result. You know, the scoreboard lies, I think, in that. And like I say, if we'd have even had a split of the decisions rather than them all going to Arsenal, then I think we'd be talking about who we got in the final eight of the competition. Genuinely, I think a lot of the credit for that has to go to Gattuso. I think he really went for it in the second leg, and we got the goal. I say it's just one of those things that I hate to have to keep talking about, because I've seen no end of the controversy that's come from the penalty, etc. I mean, it's come out today that he's not going to be punished retrospectively for it, which is an absolute disgrace.
Well, and to be honest, I don't think Welbeck necessarily should be punished for it. I think it should be on the referee. I mean, the official was right there. He's staring at the official before he even goes down. They should be the ones punished. The player, I understand the cries for it, but let's be real. Diving's been a part of football since football's been a part of Earth, you know? So it's not like you're trained. I mean, you are trained not to dive, but it's all almost implied, like, take the penalty if it's there. So I don't know. I do blame Danny Welbeck, because ultimately he's the one that dove. But at the end of the day, it's like I probably would have done the same thing in that position. Hakan did it in the first leg, which shows his character. You know, had he have done it in the first leg, then we'd be going into it 2-1, get his next goal, we'd be 2-2 potentially. And who knows, maybe that would have changed things. But, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda.
Yeah, I know what you're saying about Welbeck. You know, players in the, it's just the modern game that they always look for any kind of competitive advantage, even if it is a bit of gamesmanship. For me, I'd punish them both. I think punish the ref, or punish the official behind the goal, who I think was the one who made the call. I'd punish him for what was just clearly a terrible decision, but I'd also punish Welbeck, because like you say, he's looking at the official as he goes down. So for me, it's a deliberate attempt to deceive the official, which by the letter of the law should result in some kind of punishment. And if you're not going to enforce it for that, what are they going to enforce it for?
Oh, they'll enforce it for when we're tackled in the box, we're taken down on the edge of the box, and say, hey, that's a foul.
Yeah,
that's what they card you for.
I mean, I know people go on about this conspiracy that refs have against us, and I don't believe it. I think we are sometimes hard done by in key moments, but I also, you know, you look at that penalty on Sunday against Kievo, which obviously we'll come on to. I think we were a little bit fortunate to get that. I was watching the game, and my dad was in the next room, and he said that it was one of the worst handball decisions he's ever seen. I've seen it maybe 5 times, and I keep switching between whether it was a penalty or not, but at the moment, I'm thinking now that wasn't a penalty on Sunday. You could argue we get the rub of the green with some decisions too, but it was just the magnitude of the game, and the referee made a horrendous call, and you know, nobody in the away end let it go after that. But you know, like you mentioned, I was at the game, and it was just a truly incredible experience. It was my first time actually watching Milan play in England. I've seen Milan legends play Arsenal legends at the Emirates. I saw that last year. But haven't seen Milan play a competitive fixture in England before, and it's always been a dream of mine. So when I saw the draw get made, I went absolutely wild, and I was like, I have to get a ticket for this. I have to give a shout out to my mate Andrea, who sent his friend to queue up for the ticket for me at Casa Milan to get to the game. And you know, I owe him a lot for actually just being there, because some of my friends weren't so lucky in terms of getting tickets, because I'm sure a few of you will have seen the ticket office online had some kind of malfunction where it wasn't allowing people to buy tickets for the away section. So a lot of fans outside of Italy didn't get a chance to go in the away section, which was a huge shame. But yeah, thanks to Andrea, I managed to get in there. Just an incredible day, really. The Curva Sud and, you know, all of the sort of Milan ultras gathered outside Highbury and Islington London Underground station at about 5 o'clock. Everyone was like, it's quite a big area outside the station, so everyone was, you know, having a few beers, and the songs got going. I must admit, I thought, you know, with British police that it was going to get a little bit restless, let's say, but it didn't. You know, the police were very good. They just let people get on with it. And then there was the march to the stadium at about 5:30, which was absolutely incredible. You know, there was just hundreds of people all singing, all bouncing, supporting the team. So many flags, just red and black everywhere, you know, just walking down streets. And there was no animosity. You know, it was, nothing got broken, nothing got damaged. It was just people out there to support their team. You know, so many different nationalities there. You've seen Milan Club Bulgaria, Milan Club Slovenia, Milan Club London made an appearance, obviously, because it's a close game for them. But and then just being in the away section as well. Incredible. I've never been part of an atmosphere quite like it, to be honest, apart from when I was actually in the Curva Sud for the 3-0 derby win back in 2016 now.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, just nuts. I cannot put it into words unless you've experienced it. You come out of the stadium physically exhausted because you've been bouncing and singing so much, but when you're in there, you don't feel like there's another choice. Not in a bad way, but just because, you know, everyone's so happy, and the actual game wasn't going our way for very long. You know, we had those 3 minutes where we were ahead, and of course, the atmosphere was the best at that point. But even as soon as the third goal went in for Arsenal, just went straight into another song and sung louder than them celebrating. And it's just like, this is what it's all about. This is what, you could see what it meant to the people around me who had travelled, obviously, from Italy. You know, it's their club, it's their team, it's their city, it's everything to them. And it was just a pleasure to be a part of that. And yeah. I think that's about it. I managed to make my last train home as well, even though I got back to, because I live in Leeds, I got back there at 3 a.m. Last train out of London back up, well, I say up north for me, it's normally a 2.5 hour journey, but I basically got home at 3 a.m. But I did it, and it was an incredible experience, and yeah, that's about it, I think.
Yeah, I'm jealous you got to go to that. You know, I still have yet to see a Milan game live. And, you know, obviously the majority of the reason behind that is my location.
Yeah.
Being that most tickets to Milan are closer to $2,000 than they are $500. So it definitely, you know, outweighs that. But I was lucky enough to actually catch a PSG game in one of their USA preseasons and sit with the ultras from Paris.
Mm-hmm.
And similar atmosphere. I mean, jumping, screaming, singing, And I don't speak French. I don't know what I was saying. I was probably pronouncing everything wrong. But you're absolutely right. You sing along the whole time because you really don't have a choice when you're in that section. And without a doubt, that was my favorite experience at a game. And it wasn't even a competitive one. It was a preseason tournament against Leicester, and they smashed them 4-1. So that was a lot of fun to watch. Great times. I can't wait to do it. Hopefully for Milan next season, if not later this year, probably not this year, but next year I'm going to plan it out, and who knows, maybe we'll have a Sempre Milan meetup at the game or something.
Yeah, it'd certainly be nice. Yeah, I suppose it's one of those things that you don't really consider is just how far-reaching our fan base is. We've got so many fans in Asia as well, like, you know, Indonesia, China, and then as far away as you in Arizona. So it's nuts how big our fan base is, and it's good. That was the overwhelming thing for me from the evening, was just how many different groups were represented. Like I said, there was obviously Milan Club London, there was Bulgaria, Dublin, Slovenia, Albania. Just incredible. It's incredible how so many different people who come from so many different backgrounds are united under one badge, one team, and just all having fun in the section. And yeah, I can't recommend it enough to go and watch a game live. Obviously, it's not possible for some people, but it's one of those life-changing experiences. I mean, I'd been to Italy to watch us 5 times.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Including like three. Before the last derby, I'd done the last three. And then I did the cup final in 2016. So, and I'll hopefully be doing the cup final this year, that or Fiorentina at home for the last game of the season, which could actually be quite a big game now. So yeah, just going to see the team live is absolutely a magical experience. And, you know, it doesn't have to be an away game like the Arsenal one was. Obviously, I cannot put into words the feeling that I had when I first stepped out of the metro and saw San Siro for the first time. This huge, huge, colossal, like, structure. But it instantly just feels like home. And, yeah, it's easy, I suppose, when we've lost a game like 5-1 on aggregate or whatever, it's so easy to lose sight of the bigger picture, and that is that we support a fucking great football team. And yeah, makes me proud to support the team that I do.
Yeah, even in defeat, you know, you guys, obviously, you know, you were in the stadium as we just discussed, but after the game, you know, even before the game ended, Arsenal fans were leaving to beat traffic. The Milan fans stayed well after the game,
yeah,
singing, cheering, chanting. Bonucci and the rest of the boys threw jerseys into the stand for you. I mean, it was incredible. I couldn't be more proud of not only the team, but the fans, because we've gone through a lot with this team in the last almost decade now, and there's been times when our fans have been the people leaving early, jeering their own players on the pitch, and now we're past that. We're proud to be Milanisti, and that's the way it should be. So I could be happier with the result, obviously, but the way the team went about it, I couldn't be happier. The fans, the team, everyone, they gave their all, and that's what matters.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, and that's all you can ask for as a fan. And, you know, when you have a good night, honestly, sometimes you just don't really care what the result is, and that was the case. But I did care what the result was on Sunday. Sunday being yesterday, we're recording this on Monday. We beat Chievo 3-2, went 1-0 up early on through Calhanoglu. They hit back through, oh, testing me now. Who equalised?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. Let me check.
I know Roberto Inglese scored the second goal for them. It was Stepinski. Mary Stepinski equalised with the tap.
Yes.
And then they said on BT commentary that it was Bursa who'd scored the second goal, and I thought, oh, not against.
And Bursa wasn't even on the field at the time.
I was like, eh? I haven't heard his name all game. Roberto Inglese scored the second. And then We pulled it out, clutch. Cutrone equalised with a goal that was ruled out initially, then they went to VAR and adjudged that he was onside when he tapped in a rebound from Biglia's shot. And then Andre Silva converts a loose ball from a corner. Once again, the late hero for us, and we get what could be our biggest 3 points of the season. I know we keep saying that, but especially with Inter and Roma winning, that was huge because it looked like we were going to drop points, but we kept pace with them again. We didn't make it easy, but we got the job done.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back to the 3 points being so important, I mean, you're right. All the teams directly competing above us won. So this was really a win to keep your position or lose and let them go ahead of you. I mean, there really was no win situation in this other than get the points and remain exactly where you're at. So that, I mean, that's always a tough situation going into it. Obviously, it was a team that everyone expected us to breeze past, being Kievo. Was now, are they bottom three, or are they just a point off of bottom three, I believe?
I think they're struggling.
So they're 1 point off of bottom three right now. Mm-hmm. And they're in 16th, but that's only because Spal is tied with them at 25 points and same goal difference. But back to the game, you know, the only reason we even struggled, because our defense is just a little messed up at the moment, with Romagnoli picking up a knock earlier this weekend and still not having any fullbacks. It definitely became difficult for us. So that's where it was. You know, I was lucky enough, or I don't even know if lucky enough, but weirdly enough, I was predicting the game before it was happening live on Twitter there, and everything I was saying was coming true.
It
was
really did.
Pretty awesome. Yeah. It started, actually, I believe this was during the Arsenal game. I had wore a Çalhanoğlu jersey because I said, oh, today's the day he's going to score.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no, it started the game before that against Genoa. I wore Andre Silva. He gets the game winner there.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Then I put on Çalhanoğlu's jersey for the Arsenal game, scores there. Wore it again for this game. He scores.
And then
Stepinski's got his goal. And then, you know, a minute later, Roberto Iglesias got the next one. We're obviously struggling. I did tweet out that after the first goal, I said we need 3 goals to win. Zapata's a liability. And sure enough, both of them were, in my opinion, Zapata disaster classes, which led to the two being converted.
Mm.
Patrick's goal, you know, like you said, called off originally. And then there's a video going around right now. If you haven't seen it, definitely check it out. It's fantastic. It's when the referee comes back to the huddle of all the Milan and Verona players and gives a signal that the goal is being given now. And Patrick sprints off, hands flailing in the air, just excited, running towards the ball. The goalkeeper kicks it out. So Crotone just starts kind of taunting him, raises his arms like for the fans to start cheering, runs to the other side and does it again. It's awesome to see.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely go check it out. It's all over Twitter, all over the internet right now. So go look for that. But then Andre Silva came on at the hour mark, 60 minutes in, and we were struggling for a while there. It was a close one. So I put on my Andre Silva jersey, took off the Çalhanoğlu, and even tweeted out, Hakan scored because I was wearing his jersey, put on Andre Silva, hopefully he gets the winner. And then, sure enough, Mr. 3 points comes through
Mr.
once again.
Mr. 3 points.
Gets the late winner, 82nd minute there. And then there was one last prediction, which I was hoping wouldn't be true, but unfortunately it was. We were awarded a late 94th minute penalty. And I said, Kessie's going to miss this. I actually said skyrocket. So technically I was wrong because it was blocked. But still, he didn't convert that. So
yeah,
besides
Paul
that,
penalty.
We looked fantastic. That's a game that I would have loved to have been at for sure. Definitely one that, with the atmosphere, I was sweating profusely just watching that game on the edge of your seat stuff. So very happy. That's five straight victories in the league now. I believe 10 undefeated. 8 wins and 2 draws. So hopefully we could carry that into Juve, which is coming up after the break.
Yeah, you've hit the nail on the head there. I think it says a lot that our defensive record in this unbeaten run is still so good, despite conceding 2 against Kievo.
Right. I mean, we're only second to Juve in goals conceded this year. They haven't conceded any. We've conceded 5, and 2 of them were this weekend. So definitely great form. And that you know, could be testament to how much of a rock at the back Romagnoli is. Now that we missed him, we concede 2.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think... So I think I've seen various opinions about what exactly went wrong in those sort of 15 minutes, I would say, from 30 minutes to 45, maybe even 30 to 40 minutes, what went wrong where Chievo took the game by the scruff of the neck, came from 1-0 down to 2-1 up. I think you can attribute part of the blame to our fullbacks. I don't think Fabio Barini is a right back. You know, he's done a good job as a temporary solution, but that is all he's ever going to be because he lacks the positional awareness. It's as simple as that. He's not a right back, so you cannot expect him to play like, you know, Mario Tassotti. It's just not going to happen. And he does occasionally have lapses. Sometimes he gets caught committing too far forward. When he's sharing a right side with Suso, naturally, in a game like the a home game against Chievo, Suso's going to be drifting further towards the other final third rather than tracking back. I think that Barini got a little bit exposed in that sense. I don't think Ricardo Rodriguez has been at his best for a while. I think he's been a 5 or 6 out of 10 for the last few games now. We could do with him stepping up a little bit, but I think that most of the joy for them in that spell came down his left side. I mean, you've seen it for the second goal. The ball getting eventually bobbled all the way over to Inglese, who, yeah, fair enough, it's a fantastic shot, but he should not be unmarked on the edge of the box either. So, you know, Zapata, you could argue, yes, I think he could stick a foot out for the first goal of theirs as the ball's coming across the edge of the 6-yard box. But Stupinski's a striker. He should be on him. He should be man-marking Stupinski. That's his job, is to not let him free inside the 18-yard box. So instead of blocking the ball, you know, with an outstretched foot, he should be stood up in that position. You know, it's where Romagnoli would have been. Simple as that. I observed Zapata quite closely because I wanted to see just how this sounds hot, sounds awful, but like how much worse he really is than our other options. But he always seems to be a bit last ditch. He always seems to know that he's out of position somehow, so he has to scramble to clear a ball, and it works, but it doesn't look great. And then you've got someone with the class that Romagnoli has. You know, people talk about him like, you know, he could be the next Nesta, which is obviously a big statement. But if you look at his composure and you look at his anticipation and everything like that, it's chalk and cheese between him and Zapata, I think. I don't think Zapata had a nightmare by any stretch, but Musacchio has to be in ahead of him, I'm afraid. He looked pretty good when he came on, Musacchio.
Yeah, he really did. And, you know, it goes to show that he probably should have started over Zapata. I believe we played him as a right back, three at the back for a little bit as well, and then we threw him on and he became a right back after we saw that the three back was kind of a bad idea. Made that transition when Andre Silva came on at the hour mark for Barini and it looked like a 3-5-2. It wasn't working too well, and then Musacchio came on and made it a 4-4-2, it looked like. So that was a good transition to see Gattuso's tactical awareness. But back to the original point of Musacchio, he looked great. He didn't look like he's missed time at all. Definitely needs to be getting the nod over Zapata in the future. It's been unfair to him this season, and we've discussed it before. Because of Bonucci's signing being unexpected, he was supposed to start. Obviously, he's not going to start over the two other guys, so maybe play him in cup games or something. I mean, where we're at in the season now, definitely not going to start him in the final. That's got to be the boys. So definitely he should be the backup option for any of our defensive positions. Maybe not left back. No one's ever seen him there, but absolutely don't start Zapata. Start him.
Yep, totally agree with you on that. And it almost made me feel a bit sorry for him when he came on because he was so good that it made me think, how has Zapata started over him? What does Zapata have over the last few managers that we've had that he seems to keep getting a game when there's better options available? It'd be interesting to see what happens with Zapata this summer, because if he ends up staying around again, then I'll just lose all faith in the project. He's been a good professional for us, Zapata, over the years, and you know, I've got a lot of time for people like that, but we're in a rebuild, and frankly, surely we should not be paying him the money that we are when we've got Musacho sat on the bench. But yeah, you made a good point about Gattuso switching it up during the game. Andre Silva came on the hour mark, and like I said, we switched to a 3-5-2, which was nice to see, because I think a lot of people have been running with this agenda that Gattuso is all about Grinta. He's all about getting 100% effort out of his players, then fighting until the final whistle, which they do. Don't get me wrong, they do that. But they've been saying that he's that, and he's not a tactical manager. I think he proved people wrong with this game alone. You know, if you were to watch this game, how Gattuso reacted to the various situations and the key events within the game, you wouldn't be able to tell that this was his first big job. No way. You'd think he'd been managing for years. You know, going two up front, switching to a 3-5-2, despite only having two centre-backs on the pitch, was absolutely brilliant. And then obviously when we go up again, makes the very easy transition of bringing off a striker for a defender, and then that's it. We're back to one up front, and we're back to having, well, like four at the back. So I think he showed a lot of tactical nous in the game, and that's encouraging to see. Because
yeah, and it's not the first game that he showed it in either. I mean, we look at both legs against Arsenal. We started 4-3-3, switched to a 4-4-2 in the first leg, halfway through or a little later, and that's when we started doing better, was when we made that change. And then the second leg, we come out in a 4-4-2. But then we go to the league and switch back to our bread and butter, the 4-3-3, because he knows not to just make a change because it worked in one game, but he could just see it. And when he took over, he was a 3-5-2, recognized it wasn't successful, made the switch to the 4-3-3, and one thing that he's been able to do that none of our recent managers have been able to do is use multiple formations successfully. Yeah. All the other managers have focused on one and then make a drastic change and everyone's confused, whereas Gattuso's been able to focus on one and then clearly focus on more than one as well, and that way we could switch it around when we need to, and it's worked. Every time he's made a positional or a formation change, it's been positively effective in each game. I mean, it's incredible how well Gattuso has done, not just at Milan, but in general as a manager. It's something that not many people expected, especially given his previous managerial history, just looking at the numbers there. His tactical acumen is much higher than people imagine, mine included. I really thought he was going to be, like you said, just a Grinta merchant. I didn't expect much to come from it, but he definitely brings a lot more than just passion. But one thing, another technical decision that he made that we should probably discuss is someone didn't get called up this week.
Nikola Kalinic. About that? Yeah, well, we need to talk about that, definitely. Well, I don't know where to begin with this, because he gave the explanation for it and basically said that he's not been trying hard enough in training, and I think he's absolutely right to drop a player if they're not pulling their weight in training. And he ended up giving the opportunity, even though he didn't get on the pitch, to the young striker Frank Tsadjut, which I think is the correct pronunciation, Tsadjut, who's our starting Primavera striker at the moment, gave the opportunity to him on the bench instead. Do I think that it's just about training? I don't. I think Gattuso has genuinely seen during games as well that Kalinic is not going to fit in any type of system that he wants to play. I don't think it's about effort in training. I think it's about his efforts in general. He's not been good enough. He's not been pulling his weight. You know, Gattuso was manager of the Primavera. Of course he's going to give a shot to players who deserve it more than someone like Kalinic. It's natural. Kalinic was Montella's buy, and I think Gattuso's tried his best to make it work. And, you know, seeing Cotrone and Andrea Silva score decisive goals on Sunday could be the final nail in Kalinic's coffin. Do you think?
Yeah, I mean, when you leave a striker behind like that as kind of a statement move, and then both the backup strikers score decisive goals, an equalizer and a go-ahead goal to win it, that's huge, and that's bad if you're the striker that got left home. you did touch on saying that he's been seeing stuff in games, and that's why he's not getting it. Well, that's the exact reason where it all started. You know, from my understanding, what I read and what I heard was anyone who's ever played on a team knows that there's two or three different colored training bibs depending on your team. One for starters, one for bench players, and either none for the reserve or a different color for the reserve players. To my understanding, Kalinic has always had the starting bib, and it was given to Cutrone over the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Milan trains with the GPS packs on. We've all seen them during videos. They look kind of like a sports bra that the guy's wearing with a big back, and we're all confused. What that does is it's a GPS. It's tracking your speeds, your heart rate, basically all your movement, everything that you're doing, and it stores the data. Now, we've used that for quite some time, and Gattuso looked at that and noticed that all his numbers were significantly lower than they've ever been, and he's not injured, and it just so happened to be right after he had that bib taken away. So from there, that's when he decided to make the decision, and being the man that Gattuso is, doesn't make anything a secret, called the entire squad into a team huddle at the end and said, Kalinic is not getting called up because of this. And that's crazy. Huge for the opposite of morale. Like, it's huge to hurt morale for Kalinic. But definitely makes a sign. And then after the game, he even said, you know, he said it before, anyone who doesn't want to work for him won't work for him. And that's why they got left home. So he said he'll sit on the couch until he decides to start playing again. And because a coach like Gattuso, all he asks for is that you show up and try your hardest. And that's what he's already praised Musacchio for, being a complete professional, even though he's not playing. He was ready to go, warmed up for a full 90 minutes in one game because he said you're probably going to come on for one of the injured center backs. I can't remember which one, but ultimately he didn't come on. And Gattuso still praised him because he was warming up and ready to go that whole game. He even praised Andre Silva, said during his drought he was working hard still. We only saw him, you know, kind of pout once, and that was after the game when it was over, and he walked into the locker room, but instead of celebrating with everyone. And I'm sure he got a talking to for that, because we never saw it again or heard anything about it, and he's been right there ever since. Ironically, his goal drought, he was on 8 goals during that goal drought, which is double what Kalinic has, so interesting little tidbit there, but absolutely, Kalinic just needs to get his act together. You know, he doesn't have the fans behind him, and now that you've lost the coach, that's not a good sign. Is it a 1-year loan with obligation to buy?
Yeah, I remember Mirabella joking at the time when he signed the contract. He said, you better play well or we're sending you back to Fiorentina. And it caused a bit of a row with the Fiorentina director, but honestly,
now,
it doesn't
look like...
Is that
an option, though, for us to send it back?
I think so. I think we can choose not to redeem it. It looks like we're going to redeem it with Kessié, like we can trigger that whenever we want, but I think there's a chance that Kalinic doesn't get signed by us. We've paid a fee for the loan, so technically we're covered for this year, but we don't have to fork out the... Let me just look it up quickly. But I just want to ask you in the meantime, do you think that there's a chance that Kalinic rises to the challenge that Gattuso set and he puts in the effort in training, and that he could become a really useful player this season, or do you think he's a bit of a lost cause?
I wouldn't say lost cause, but I definitely don't think he's going to be able to rise up to it. I mean, you look at it this way, for us, Milan's in week 28, but 29 weeks into the season, that gives us 10 games left, plus we had the final, that's 11 games. Yeah, that's a long time to turn around your form, but not when you got two young prospects that are well ahead of you already in goal tally. I don't think he even gets the opportunity. I mean, I do think he's going to play still this season. I don't think he's going to be shunned out completely, but I don't think he's going to come back from it. If we do have the ability not to purchase him, I think he goes right back to Fiorentina.
Says here, obligation to purchase for a reported fee of around 25 million. So I wonder if the obligation is based on appearances, and is now the time that we've realised that we're going to have to buy him if we keep playing him, and maybe that's why Gattuso's benched him or not even picked him. That's a conspiracy theory.
Potentially.
Mm.
I mean, and if we are forced to buy him, I could see us, you know, not even really buying him so much as like just finalizing that and having a team ready to pay that instead, you know, something like that. Or
might go to China, maybe.
Right, yeah. Because if that's if China wants him, then we'll probably pay the 25 and sell him for 30 or 40, you know, and make a little off of it.
Yeah, interesting situation with Kalinic. Obviously, we'll see how it pans out. Kalinic or no Kalinic, how confident are you going into the Juve game?
More confident without him than with him. it's a tough game. That is never an easy game. Anyone who goes into that game thinking it's going to be easy is a fool. Now, that doesn't mean you can't be confident going into it, because we won last season and they have lost a couple times already this season, not to mention just drew 0-0 against Spal at the weekend. So anything is possible in football. That's why we play the game. But definitely going to be a tough one. I don't think it's make or break. Unfortunately, it's just, well, it might be. It might determine where we finish in the table. I mean, if you look at it, the teams we need to lose, they don't have that many tough games left in the season. We still have arguably three or four, you know, with Juve, Napoli, the Derby, and Atalanta being the other tough one, in my opinion. It could get tough for us here, but we've proven we could win against big teams, Lazio and Roma being examples of that. So it's doable. It'll be tough. I'd love to see Andre Silva get a full 90 against it.
Yeah. Yeah, same. I think he'll start, to be honest. Although, if he goes with a 4-3-3, he may prefer someone who... And this isn't dissing Andre Silva's work ethic, but he may go for Cutrone, who generally, out of our three strikers, covers the most ground. He, you know, he cuts out the passing lanes. And I don't think Gattuso will necessarily be thinking defence first. I think we'll go there with every intention of trying to win the game, trying to nick the game, maybe like we did at Roma, do a really professional job at one end and try and nick it at the other. But, yeah, you're right, it's never an easy game. Even during our most dominant periods as a team, you know, you go back to the 90s, you go back to the early 2000s and the early 2010s, if that makes sense. We've always struggled there. Our record in this fixture is just not good at all. And I never expect to get any points from this game. And that may be, you know, some people may call me negative for that, but I would say it's more realistic. And we're in amazing form. You know, over the last eight games, there's only one team that's in better form than us, and that's Juve. So that kind of puts it in perspective. They're rolling as well. We are. They've obviously got a better team, or rather one that's, you know, had years and years to gel and is coached by one of the best coaches in the world. Looks like they're going to win the Scudetto again this year, although Napoli will have something to say about that. It's just not an easy game. And I understand and I respect the people who are confidently hopeful about it, but if we got a draw, I would be absolutely delighted. And I'm just looking at the fixtures. So Roma travel to Bologna. If Bologna can play like they did at Lazio, then they've got a chance of getting something. But Inter host Hellas Verona, who are absolutely useless, and Lazio host Benevento. So it looks like we might lose a bit of ground in the coming round, but it's important that we don't get our heads down if we were to lose against Juve and if the other teams were to sort of widen the gap a little bit. So yeah, see what happens, eh?
Yeah, one of the things that you just pointed out, just to go back to you real quick, was that you don't think Gattuso is going to be defense first. And in the last few games, I've noticed he's really focused on, as soon as the game starts, get a first early attack. And we saw it against Genoa, Arsenal, and Chievo. Right off the bat, we have a shot almost immediately within the first minute, whether it's good or bad, you know, and we actually haven't made any of them. But it sets the pace for the next 10-15 minutes. We've been starting off stronger than the other team consistently now for quite some time. And against bigger clubs too. So I don't think Juve's a bigger, well, I mean, in current state, Juve's definitely a bigger team, but overall we are, obviously. But
yeah,
I think it might offset them a little bit. You know, they're going to go into it with the same mentality that they always go into every game, is that, well, they're going to win. And if we come out strong like that, hopefully we're good. The only thing I'm worried about is win, lose, or draw, Bonucci getting a yellow card.
Yeah.
He wouldn't be able to play in the Derby. Now, to my knowledge, it would just be the next game, correct? Even though the Derby is technically match day, like 27, it
Yeah.
wouldn't be. Okay. That's what I thought as well. I just wanted to clarify that. So, yeah, I mean, missing him in the Derby is more critical to me than missing him in the Juve game, because I just don't think we could get a point against Juve. We could win against Inter, even though I'm more nervous for that game, mainly because it's a toss-up, whereas Juve, I just don't have the confidence. So that's why I want all of our guys there. And Conte may even be back in time for that. He was called up this weekend. I was on the bench. So it's possible that he plays in one of those games.
So, yeah, two things. Number one, I can't see Bonucci not getting a yellow card against Juve. It's his former team. He's going to be fired up. But, you know, he's a wise player, obviously one of the best defenders in the world. I hope he can keep himself in check, and he'll know that, you know, if he picks up another yellow card, then that's going to have consequences for the team. In the next game, which is against Inter, which is arguably our biggest game of the entire season. And yeah, I just hope that he can somehow avoid getting a yellow card. But I saw you tweet earlier about how tactically should he have got a yellow against Genoa, so he was banned for the Chievo game. That would have been interesting with Romagnoli injured if we'd have lined up with a centre
Right,
back
yeah.
pairing of Zapata and Musacchio. But yeah, I understood the point of it, and I think now he's walking a tightrope. I think Juve, being the team that they are, will perhaps look to exploit him. And yeah, we'll see what happens. But who knows? He could put in a Baresi-esque performance against his former team, and we could get a nil-nil or even nick it. But I did see something today. Oh no, sorry. The second thing that I wanted to mention was, do you think that if Conte is ready for the game, would you throw him straight into a big game like that, or would you maybe go for Calabria, who might be fit by then?
Yeah, I'd probably wait a little bit. Maybe put him in after the halfway marker. I don't know if starting him right away would be the best idea.
I have this horrible feeling about Conte playing in either of the next two matches. I wouldn't start him in either personally, and that sounds baffling, but it's like, you know, do you a player that's missed since when did he do the injury? September? We've been out
Yeah,
since
it
September.
was.
A player who's been out in September, do you really want to bring them back against Juve or in a derby? I think
No, you
it's
don't. Ideally, it would be against a team like Chievo, which I believe was the plan until things started going to shit there for a second. Now, did you see this? And I'm just seeing it right now on Twitter. It says it was actually from this morning. Chiellini is injured. He's not going to make the
Yes,
game.
that's what I was just going to mention. That's a big boost for us because that means they're going to have one of the youngest centre backs starting, I believe. I'm guessing they still play three at the back, so they'll now be Bajagli, maybe Benacia, and let me just look at their last lineup. Sorry, go ahead.
I believe Rugani started their last game, actually.
Oh, they played four at the back in the last game. Rugani and Chiellini. And then Asamoah and Decilio. Oh God, Decilio's gonna play.
I saw today or yesterday that Desilio has kind of become a mainstay on their team since like New Year's or so.
And that's when they haven't conceded a goal since.
That's pure coincidence because he's shit, so I'm not sure how that happened,
I
but
don't know. No, he's terrible. But I think that just goes to show that that team can make anyone look good. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Do you swap Chiellini out then for Bajagli, who came on for Chiellini in the last game when he was injured? I'm guessing that it'll be Bajagli and Rugani at the back, which could be interesting because I'd target Bajagli with him being slow. If we start Andre Silva or Cutrone, that could really play into our hands. But you've also got to remember that they've got Benedict Howardes, and he's a very good defender too. They've got depth. So
yeah, I mean, absolutely. They have the depth to kind of get away with anything as far as who they want to start in Chiellini's place. I think Bezzaglia is, like you said, he comes on for him anyways. He's experienced. He's a great defender in his own right. But like you said, he's slow. And I just don't think his fitness is there anymore. His stamina level isn't as high as it used to be. And I feel like he wouldn't be someone that could go a full 90 at this point in his career.
He's so 36. Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely towards the end of it. Has he announced any retirement plans or anything?
Don't think so.
Wow. I know, I mean, Buffon's plan was after the World Cup. Well, obviously, that's not happening. So maybe that was his plan as well. In fact, I'm pretty sure that was.
Yeah.
Look it up here real quick.
He's had a bit of... Oh, wow. It says... I'm just reading a report here that both Chiellini and Bezzaglia are out of contract in June, but they're both expected to sign extensions. Chiellini being multi-year, Bezzaglia a one-year deal, which I suppose is fair enough.
Did he get called up? Do we know if Bezzaglia got called up?
I don't think so, no.
I'm looking at this article from November that says De Rossi, Chiellini, and Bezzaglia all retired from international duty after they failed to qualify.
That sounds about right. I guess, though, because he's not going to play another major tournament now, is he? So.
Right, I mean, there just wouldn't be any reason to, honestly, at this point.
Ah, he announced it. Yeah, immediately following the 0-0 draw with Sweden.
Okay.
Yeah.
Which it appears the call up was. So Chiellini did get called up, but obviously he's injured, so he's not going to show up anyways.
And
so did Rugani. So maybe they do start Bezzaglia because Rugani will be a little bit. Well, he's young, so he'll be fine.
I think he'll play. I think Rugani will play alongside Bezzaglia. I think that'll be the answer.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Romagnoli is going to have a full 2 weeks off to recover ahead of the game, which is a blessing.
Yeah, you know, his injury sounds a little shady to me. Sounds more of a tactical decision to claim injured and just stay behind, but... And then it makes you wonder, well, why wouldn't Bonucci do it instead or something? But so I don't know. Maybe it is legit. It just seemed very odd because all I heard was like a fatigue-related injury, which, as far as I'm concerned, isn't an injury.
That's just tiredness.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely tactical, I think. Definitely tactical, but, you know, if they can prove it a little, if they can provide some evidence, then, yeah, fair enough.
Right, I think he didn't even get the call up against Chievo.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that was the evidence. Milan were like, look, he's not even fit enough to play this game, so, you know, we're not mugging you off. But I think in reality, they've planned that very tactically. And perhaps an eye on Bonucci as well. Imagine if he was actually injured and we'd be going into a game against Juve with a makeshift back four, that would not fill me with a lot of confidence. So,
I believe Bonucci was he suspended for the first game against Juve? He didn't play it because he collected his award for world's best defender that day instead.
Ironic. Yeah, he didn't play that game. He was. Did he get a red in the previous game?
You know what? I believe that's exactly what it was.
Let me quickly look it up.
I got it right here.
My memory of this season is pretty terrible.
Not a red. He didn't even get a yellow. So something must have happened. We won that cable game 4-1. So that's why everyone thought we were going to win it this time around, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know what? Okay, he got the red against Genoa, and it was a 2 or 3 game ban.
Yes, that's right. Didn't he get it for... a stray arm or something.
Yes, something dumb and silly that really wasn't that bad. But yeah, it was a 2-game suspension for it. It was unsurprising to say the least.
Yeah, and then, so I suppose if there is a bonus, it's that we will have him against his former team this time. And of course, it's not the last time we play Juve this year. This is a bit of a precursor for the Coppa Italia final. Obviously, cup final's completely different. Literally everything goes out of the window. But the deeper that Juve go in the Champions League, the more optimistic I will feel that, you know, with that being their last game of the season, they'll proper just not be asked about it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, ideally, leading up to it, we've basically secured either Champions League or Europa, if Champions League got a question, and we could just kind of rest back in that Fiorentina game and then go all out in the Copa.
Yeah, absolutely. Fingers crossed. Any rumors to discuss? Anything that's happened over the last week?
Well, we signed a striker, or did we?
Yeah, that's the big question, or did we? Nathan Bernardes Suarez, I guess it'll be pronounced.
Suarez is how I said
Suarez,
it.
Suarez, yeah, yeah. Either way. signed because he was pictured in a shirt, but then didn't because it got denied, apparently. But then actually did. So nobody seems to know anything about him. He's been without a club for a few months, apparently, but before that was playing in Brazil. Just, again, this trend that we seem to have going of signing random players for the Primavera system.
I don't think it's a bad idea.
No.
I don't know anything about him, neither does really anyone, but it makes sense that we do it because we sign up for the Primavera, they play there for, you know, a season or so, however long they need, and then we could promote them, and now all these South American players are considered homegrown, and they don't go against our tally, you know, whereas before, right now, who is taking up a spot? It's Zapata, and who's the other person taking up? Do we have a free spot right now? Is it Musacchio? Where's he from?
Spain.
Okay, I think. Never mind. I thought he was Argentina for some reason.
Yeah, do you know what? He might be Argentinian. One sec, let me... Musacchio... Matteo Musacchio.
He's
Argentine. He's actually played for them as well.
Mm-hmm. And Gustavo Gomez is Paraguay. So it's Gustavo Gomez and Musacchio, because Zapata's been with us long enough now to where I think he no longer counts towards that. Well, maybe I'm wrong, because we have a lot of Argentinians now that I'm looking at it.
Jose Mauri, though, for example, is like, he counts as homegrown.
And so does Biglia, then, because he's been in the country for so long.
Or does he, though? It depends. So for players that have not come through our system, so for players that we signed that are, them being a non-EU player depends on if they have a European passport. So if Bilia doesn't have a European passport, then he's taking up one of our non-EU slots.
Right.
Let me have a look. So there's no, like, obvious answer to this.
Because before it was Luis Adriano and Baca that were using up both of them, right? And then Adriano left, and we were pursuing Musacchio, so I believe he is one of them. And then Baca left, freeing up the other one. Mm. It's definitely not Zapata at this point. Doubt it's Mauri. So I think maybe either we have an open spot or it's Bilia. No, it's got to be Gustavo Gomez, because we got him straight from Paraguay.
Yeah. We signed him from Lanús, actually, in Argentina, but yeah, same.
Yeah. Oh, that even better then. So we know it's a South American country. So there we go. Mystery solved. Bye. Sempre Detective Podcast.
It might actually be bad that we didn't know that anyway, but who cares?
well, neither will play.
One rumor that did come out today, I actually covered this for the site like a matter of two hours ago, maybe. I don't know if you've seen that Twitter account, La Oracolo Rossoniero, basically the red and black oracle.
I have a hypothesis about him, and I'll get to that in a second.
Go on. I want to hear it now.
I think he's the long-dead account, Milanello. He's come through on all of his predictions.
Well, this is the thing that excited me about, because he's nailed pretty much everything. He's some kind of inside source. Either that or he's very good at guessing stuff. But I think he knows his stuff, and he's got quite a following already now. He's over 5,000 followers. So, I mean, even some bloody journalists are following him. who are quite well respected. So they even see him as a decent source. But basically, today came out with the story that Real Madrid midfielder Dani Ceballos has been offered to Milan for €40 million. A, do you know anything about Ceballos? And B, would you take him on a team?
I would. Yeah. And I think he'd walk in. I think he'd start right away. Mm. And we need the extra player as well, especially the midfield. I think Bonaventura in recent form has shown that he's kind of getting burned out. He's played just about every game since getting to the club. I think it would do him wonders to have someone not even starting over him, although I think Ceballos would, but just having that extra competition and the ability to rest, I think will bring out the Jack that we've come to know. But absolutely, I don't think $40 million is that ridiculous for a player his quality, especially in this market. I'm all for it. I say do it.
Yeah, I have two theories on this. My first one being that, you know, we don't really know the kind of player that Dani Ceballos actually is until he leaves Real Madrid. Everyone knows that, you know, a lot of the youngsters that have come into that Real Madrid team have thrived purely because they're surrounded by some of the best players in the world, plain and simple. You saw Asensio come into the team and absolutely tear it up because he had, you know, he was playing in the same team as Cristiano Ronaldo, Karim Benzema, right. Modric, Cruz feeding him. It was just like, you know, I think I'd do well in that team. But that's the thing with Ceballos. You know, he's 21 years old. He showed some promise. Looks to be a good athletic kind of central midfielder. Very much like Bonaventura, likes to drive the play forward. He's a bit different to some of the other midfielders we've been linked with. You know, he's not got the same muscle as a Vidal or a Strootman. I suppose he's a little bit like Ki Sung Jung in that he likes to drive the attacking play. But my second theory is that, you know, it's €40 million. So, like, for a 21-year-old kid who would probably sign a 5-year contract with us, you're going to make that money back, surely. So it's a wise investment. Let's just keep tabs on this, because, like I said, the thing that caught my eye is that account has been spot on about a lot of things, and it seemed to suggest that Zidane has given the green light for the move to go ahead. So maybe things are moving a little bit quicker than we... I just don't think we have $40 million to spend. I don't know.
I think we do.
Maybe it goes through, though, if we qualify for Europe.
Right. I think that's a big factor. But I also think that because the management has talked recently openly about the refinancing of the Elliott loan debt, mm-hmm. and how it's going to go. So I don't think that it's so much an issue. I think they're going to refinance for more than just the debt and get another big window coming up this summer that's going to be maybe 2 or 3 big money players. I think that's what's going to happen.
Imagine that.
Well, and that's also what the Oracle said. So,
yeah.
I mean, I'm inclined to believe him. How could you not at this point?
Yeah, if his track record continues, then we're in for an exciting summer, I think, that's for sure. I'm also worried that we may lose a couple of players, naturally. We'll see how the Donnarumma thing plays out. Suso's release clause definitely worries me.
Well, I saw a thing about Suso that said, I saw it this morning, that we're going to meet with him soon to discuss a contract renewal with a much higher release clause.
Yeah, he mentioned at various points that he's not worried about his renewal and that it'll all get sorted kind of thing. And what release clause do you put on him, or do you maybe not do a release clause?
I would either not put one, or I'd put like a 75. I think that's reasonable in today's market.
He's young. Like, people forget how young he really is. You know,
he's 23.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, he's got 10 good years ahead of him. And obviously came to us worth basically zero. And, you know, he
what did we pay? 400,000 euros?
Yeah, it was like a...
It was less than $1 million.
It was compensation fee. We technically paid nothing, but we paid £1 million. It was compensation fee to Liverpool because he was under 21.
Right, right.
And you have to pay that because he signed a pre-contract. So yeah, that's proved to be a hell of a bargain. And you know what, actually, just an interesting segue. I thought he was fantastic on Sunday as well, and he
was who scored man of the match and in their Serie A team of the week.
He's our catalyst, man. Everything just seems to go through him. He makes us tick. And you know what? You know, the comparisons to Iron Robin are never going to stop because he always cuts in. He's now added a bit to his game where he manages to sell the fake and chop to the byline, but I'm still not convinced about delivery on his right foot. But yeah, no one can stop him when he cuts in on his left foot, no matter what. And those curling, in-swinging balls, Cutrone is just almost always near the end of it. And yeah, I just think he's so important to our team. And I have criticised his consistency before, but I think that under Gattuso, he's thriving because he's keeping himself so busy. So yeah, I'm worried about his release clause because I think a team like Atletico Madrid could really use him, especially if they're going to lose the players. Well, I mean, they've lost Carrasco, for example, to China. So, we'll have to see how that plays out. But I think that's it in terms of rumours.
I think that just about does it.
Yeah, I think that's it in terms of this podcast. Good hour-long episode for everyone, which is fantastic. And might as well just fill everyone in at this point that we will be back in 2 weeks. Is that right? A fortnight?
Yes,
obviously, we've got an international break coming up, so we'll do a bit of a longer episode in 2 weeks when we review the Juve game and maybe talk about how some of our players got on during the international break, because we've got a lot of them in action. Actually, interestingly, Italy are playing two games over here in England. We're playing Argentina on Friday, and my friend may be going to the Italy team hotel on Wednesday to get me a shirt signed by Cutrone, which would be incredible. And then playing England on Monday, I think it is. So that should be interesting. See how they match up against a team that actually qualified for the World Cup. Going to get a lot of hate for that, aren't we?
No, I support it.
Well, you kind of have to, mate. You're in the same boat as them. So yeah, we'll be back in 2 weeks with a review of the Juve game and a little bit of a pre-derby special as well, because we'll be playing that in the midweek. So yeah, in the time being, thank you very much for joining us. I've been your host, Oliver Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher for my Milan specific account. That's at Kilping Chronicle. AJ, where can they find you?
Same place as always, at Twitter, Torgrud45, that's my last name, and the number 45 like Balotelli. And then for all of our other Sempre Milan social media passports, I don't know where I'm getting from, accounts, it's all / or at Sempre Milan com. So definitely check us out there. You guys already know that stuff. Other than that, thanks for listening.
Yeah, just a quick plug before I forget. Just uploaded a new video to the YouTube channel, so go and check that out. It took me ages to make. It's like basically an epilogue of the journey under Gattuso, 8 minutes long. And for those of you who have seen the film Interstellar, you might like the soundtrack that I've used. So yeah, go check that out. Thank you very much, everyone, for tuning in, and we'll catch you in a fortnight. Goodbye.